It seems that this certain pastor had a deacon who had a bad habit of using extraordinarily profane language. I mean, he would just cut loose on occasion and really cuss up a blue streak. Well, the other deacons were concerned about it. The pastor was concerned about it. They talked with him, you know, and somehow or another, it seems he would just keep forgetting. And one day the pastor went to him and just confronted him directly, and he said, "Now, we're just going to have to put a stop to this cussing." And the deacon said, "Well, pastor," said, "I have tried so hard. Maybe if me and you went fishing together and you prayed with me and counseled with me throughout the fishing trip," said, "maybe that's all I need." And the pastor said, "All right, in the interest of your future well-being," he said, "I'm willing to do that." So the day was set. They got their boat and they went out in the lake and just getting started. And the pastor threw his line over first, and sure enough, a 14-pound bass hit that sucker. He just bent that line double, and all the excitement that was going on, you cannot believe. And the deacon was encouraging the pastor, and the pastor was reeling him in, you know, and he got him up in the air, and the deacon had the net there. He was going to slip it up under that big old bass and pull him in, when at the last precise instant, the line broke and that big old bass got away. The deacon looked at the pastor and the pastor looked at the deacon. And the pastor said to the deacon, "Brother Deacon," he said, "somebody ought to say something." Well, I'm going to say two somethings if you want to know the truth about it. First of all, I would like to start out by identifying the problem, or a couple of them, in our society. James Baldwin was 100% right when he said, "Confrontation does not always bring a solution to the problem, but until you confront the problem, there is no chance that you're going to be able to solve that problem." In our America, we have a problem with two basic groups of people. They're the ones who take the ostrich approach. They're in denial that we've got a problem. They even think denial is just an Egyptian river. I mean, they do not really identify with the problem at all. They believe they ought to just bury their head in the sand. They do not believe it really exists, and all they got to do is deny it, and therefore there will be no problem. The second group believes that there is nothing we can do. It's all over. It's too late. We had our chance and we missed it. Let me address the first group just a little bit more, those who don't think there's a problem. I might relate it to the passenger pigeon. I don't know what you know about your history of the passenger pigeon, but according to World Book Encyclopedia, when Daniel Boone was traipsing the hills and mountains of Tennessee and Kentucky and North Carolina, passenger pigeon flocks were so great that they literally blocked out the sun. There is one recorded flock. It was over 50 miles wide and as much as 200 miles long. They claim that there were up to 500 million pigeons in that one single flock, that it literally blocked out the sun. They said that Daniel Boone used to kill those pigeons not by shooting them, but simply by standing on the hillside and knocking them down with his gun butt as they came by. I can just imagine somebody along about that time saying, "Now, Daniel, you better not kill so many of them pigeons. We're going to run out one day." And can't you imagine him standing there knocking those pigeons down and saying, "Man, what you talking about? Just look at the pigeons." But they buried the last one in 1914. They did run out. Freedom is pretty much that way. We can lose our freedoms one by one, and we can lose our momentum bit by bit until the day comes when we will no longer be the nation that we are today. Now, let me remind you, if you think that's an impossibility, at one time, of course, Rome was the dominant power in the world, and so was Greece and Macedonia. So was Germany, so was France, and so was England, and so was Spain. Persia at one time was the dominant force in existence, and so was Mongolia one time, the number one force in the world. But one by one, they all went by the boards. My fear is what I call the bullfrog theory, that we will fall victim to that. I know you've probably heard that if you want to boil a bullfrog, you don't boil him by throwing him in boiling water. If you do, he'll just pop out as fast as you pop in. What you do is you put the bullfrog in cold water and set him on the stove, and then you turn the heat on. And that water begins to warm up a little bit, you know, and the old bullfrog in there says, man, that feels good. Oh, boy, that's nice. Man, I like that warm water. Ooh, that feels good. Matter of fact, makes me a little drowsy. I just think I'll take myself a little nap. And, of course, he wakes up dead. When you gradually let things slip up on you, that's when it is so absolutely dangerous. Of the two groups, one who says nothing's wrong and the other who says it's too late, I simply am going to have the audacity to say that I believe there is a solution. What can we do? Number one, we can sell America to Americans. Now, we don't have to worry about selling America to anybody else, because they're lining up by the tens of millions. Let me in, man. Let me in. Let me in. Border to border, coast to coast, from all over the world, they're begging and pleading and standing in line. Give me part of America. Give me the dream that is yours. Let me share part of it. But the problem is, the rest of the world has already bought America, but we have grown so accustomed to what we have, we take it for granted. We fuss about little inconveniences, not realizing just how much we do have to be grateful for. Let's go back in our history just a little bit and learn how we're going to sell America to Americans. I love what old Patrick Henry said, and I think we got to put these not only back in the history books, we need to dramatize them in recordings and let our kids be hearing them all the time. As he stood up in that assembly that day and said, "Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains of slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." Our kids and our adults need to be hearing John Paul Jones as he uttered those immortal words, "I have not yet begun to fight." They need to hear Nathan Hale as he goes ringing down history saying, "I regret that I have but one life to give for my country." A 21-year-old patriot who refused to capitulate. We need to let everybody hear the words of Admiral Farragut as he went steaming into Mobile Bay with those words, "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead." It needs to be full speed ahead for America. We need to start teaching the real history of America. Maybe the most startling statement that you will hear me make is this one. 99% of the students in our American schools have never been taught the real history of America. I challenge you to buy a book. It is the most exciting book I have read in the last 10 years. The title of the book is The Light and the Glory. It is written by Peter Marshall and David Manuel. It reads like a novel. When you get started in it, you will be unable to put it down. It tells exactly how America was discovered, exactly what happened there when the Pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock, how they landed at the only place, at the only time it would have been safe for them to have landed. You will learn how Washington really is the incredible leader that many people still do not quite give him credit for. When you study what happened there, it will make a difference in your feelings about this country. We especially need to be teaching that to our kids so they can have the same pride and excitement and enthusiasm that we have. To build America, we need to build our strength. Theodore Roosevelt was 100% right when he said, "You speak softly, but you carry a big stick." We need to be strong, ladies and gentlemen. We need to turn the eagle loose and let him fly. Let our kids see the magnificent bird up there. Did you know that the American eagle, from 5,000 feet up in the air, can literally, and is the only bird on earth that can do this, can literally look right into the teeth of the sun? There's a protective coating that pulls down over those eyes, and he can stare right at the sun without any harm. And the next instant, he can drop those eyes and spot a field mouse 5,000 feet below. That's America. Strong enough to look in the eye of the strongest nation on earth. Step number two, the Baron de Tocqueville, the French royalist, who was touring our country during the 1830s, made an observation which is so very, very true. He said, "I've been in your homes and in your factories. I've seen the fields and the streams. I've seen the richness of the land, the harvest of your crops. I've seen the productivity of your factories. I've seen the richness of your seas. And I've seen all of the wonderful things there, the way your government functions. And all of these are magnificent. I went to those places looking for the strength of America. But it wasn't until I got into your churches that I found the strength, the real strength of America. America is great because America is good. And as long as America continues to be good, America will continue to be great. And if it ever ceases to be good, it will cease to be great." Let me tell you how we can make certain our country will always be free. We have the research to prove beyond any doubt. We know what it takes for an individual to be successful. We know that. We know that if we've got an individual who is honest and has character and integrity, who is loyal and has trust and love, who has a good attitude, is a hard worker, has the courage to take action, we know from what we have learned and documented with scientific studies that this is going to make an individual successful. And again, I'm talking about more than a standard of living. I'm talking about quality of life. Well, now, if those are the things that will make an individual successful, what will make a nation successful? Isn't it true that the more successful individuals we have, that the more successful our nation is going to be? Can you buy that idea? Does that ring your bell intellectually as well as emotionally, I hope? Then why don't we make it an absolute law that in our educational structure that we teach our kids the importance of these qualities right here? We need to be teaching our kids how to work. We need to be teaching everybody that each individual is important. Did you know that with one more vote, Andrew Johnson would have been impeached? One more vote by a cancer-stricken farmer who rode from New Jersey to Philadelphia in a blinding hailstorm is what made that declaration a unanimous one that magnificent day. We need to be telling everybody that they are important, their vote is important. One more vote in the state of Illinois. And Richard Nixon, had he gotten the vote instead of John F. Kennedy, John F. Kennedy would never have been the president of the United States. One more vote, ladies and gentlemen, can make a dramatic difference. Step number three, if America is going to maintain its world leadership position and get to the area of strength that it really is capable of getting to, we need to eradicate illiteracy. Again, I go back to Japan, and I don't mean to keep waving their flag, but I simply want to say this. In Japan today, 1% of the population is illiterate. In America, 27% of the population is illiterate. We've got to do something about solving that particular problem. Did you know that it cost us $400,000 in lost taxes every time a student drops out of high school? The difference in their earnings and the taxes they would pay on that for the rest of their working life is over $400,000. We simply cannot afford these rates of illiteracy. There's a lot of things that we can do. I think Jan McBaron, who's a physician in Columbus, Georgia, has set an example as an individual. She is teaching one by one adult illiterates to read. if every corporation in America would make it their corporate objective to start teaching one by one the people in their communities and areas how to read, it can make a dramatic difference. George Kettle in Washington, D.C. is a classic example of what can happen when somebody gets excited about this project. He donated $300,000, put it in trust. He went to one of the schools there in Washington, which is in one of the really tough areas, went to the sixth grade, and he said to those kids, "I'm putting this money in trust for you. You've got a college education waiting on you when you get out of here. First of all, though, you have got to qualify by good grades. You have got to be of sound character when you get through. You have got to have followed the rules which we've set up." In 1 year, that class went from one of the very worst in the entire city to one of the very best. You've heard it said a number of times, if there is faith in the future, there's power in the present. When these kids saw that they had some faith in the future, then they really started understanding and believing in that future. We've got to do that with our illiterates and those people who've never really had a chance in life. Each one of us has got to get involved in it. Now, without any disrespect to our government, the government cannot do it. We've been putting billions and billions and billions of dollars in public education, and the reality is, and there are other factors involved, but the reality is the rate of illiteracy is increasing and increasing and increasing. We've got to get citizens involved, individuals, corporate. We've also got to get the churches involved in this very worthwhile project. Let me say the step number four is we need to start with a statement. We need to stop the bleeding. 2,160,000 people have lost their life in the last 6 years as a direct result of smoking cigarettes. Now, the government's spending billions to subsidize tobacco. Now, where in the name of common sense can that happen? We need to do something about it. According to the American Medical Association Journal, which I read this day, in October 1987, their publication, the average person who dies from a smoking-related cause loses 15 years of lifespan. Tobacco in our society creates a year of employment for one person in exchange for 7.5 years of life for every person killed by tobacco use. We invest about $30 billion a year in smoking. The farmer gets a little over $1 billion of that. Did you know that it costs $4,611 a year more to hire a smoker than it does a non-smoker? Now, because there's so many statistics involved, I'm not going to share them with you. But if you want to challenge me on that, drop me a note in the mail. I'll send you the whole kit and the caboodle right there. And those are 1982 figures. It cost an enormous amount. Now, I recognize this kind of information is not going to make everybody happy. But the bleeding which is taking place as a result of that is incredible. We spend 60 cents, according to Paul Harvey, out of every health care dollar in our society, 60 cents of it goes to the treatment of tobacco-related illnesses and alcohol-related illnesses. We zero in on those two problems, and we can do something about our problems financially, not to mention health-wise. Now, follow me mathematically, if you will. In 1987, Americans smoked roughly 600 billion cigarettes. That's spelled with a B. Now, divide that by 20, the number of cigarettes in a packet, that means they bought 30 billion packages of cigarettes. If they will just charge an extra 50 cents tax, that will start out by raising $15 billion. Now, what do we do with the $15 billion? We take one-third of it, $5 billion, go to every tobacco farmer in America and bribe them. And we say to them, we will give you 7 times the average earnings for the last 7 years that you have been raising tobacco. In other words, take their average earnings from tobacco the last 7 years, multiply that by seven, and forever prohibit that land or that farmer from ever using that land to farm for tobacco again. Now, what can they do with that money? Well, first of all, they can start developing greenhouse crops, exotic fruits and vegetables that we need in our country that will be good for our people and otherwise. And then we can take that other $10 billion as an example, put about $5 billion of it in extremely low finance housing. If somebody's working on minimum wage, loan them the money, let's say at 2%, until they can get on their feet and get into some housing which is decent for them. We will still have $5 billion left, ladies and gentlemen, for the 101 other things that we can find to use the money for. I don't know how it grabs you. I get excited about it. To me, that makes nothing but sense. Every time you light up a cigarette, you're going to kill yourself 14 minutes earlier than you otherwise would. Let's get serious. Let's demand from our legislators that something be done about this incredible problem.